the best teaching is going to be disciplinary in its skill sets, in its focus, in its emphases, whether you're teaching high school or university level.
Just starting to think of how can we involve scholars into this process? Is getting historians who are experts in particular fields to review and vet our curriculum to make sure that it's up to date with the historiography.
The students have such incredible insights. It's almost like being in a university classroom. There's not a whole lot of difference that I see as far as the level of conversation, the kinds of ideas.
CFH is uncommonly welcoming, and we share, I think a lot of it is because we share a vision, right? There's a foundation that we all share as Christians.
The authenticity, the warmth, and that common vision, it extends into a genuineness in the sessions and in meeting people, meet people online through the CFH, in their genuine care for secondary educators.
We also genuinely, as secondary teachers, believe that we can give a gift to the CFH by talking about pedagogy.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to our virtual coffee today for the Conference on Faith and History. I'm Joey Cochran. I'm the social media coordinator for the Conference on Faith and History. Before I pass it on to Dr. Paul Thompson, I would like to just put a couple announcements in front of you and plant some ideas in your mind. If you are interested in producing some scholarship for the Conference on Faith and History, you can always send a pitch to our editor, Alicia Kaufman, at feedus@baylor.edu. We have a recent issue of Fetus at the Historia that has come out, and so you might be able to find yourself in another forthcoming issue if you start a conversation with her and you have some work to share. That being said, if you're also interested in membership with the Conference on Faith and History, I invite you to visit our website, faithandhistory.org, and look at membership and find out more about the different resources, the connections, the network, and the opportunities that you would have to be a part of our organization. And then third, just to let you know that we are going to have another virtual coffee at the end of October. Right now, I'm partnering with Lisa Clark Diller, and we're trying to find another scholar to plan something that's Halloweenish. So we might be talking about magic, witches, enchantment in history. And so if you know a young scholar that would be interested in moderating that conversation for us, we'd love to talk to that person. Send me an email at joey.cochran@wheaton.edu so that I can have that connection. And if you have ideas for panelists as well, we're always welcome and interested in hearing your ideas for not just that next one, but also for November and December as we continue to plan the rest of our year of virtual coffees. Okay, I'm going to pass it on to Paul for our conversation about secondary sources.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, or good morning, I guess, if you're on the West Coast, but some of us are on the East Coast. So I hope everybody's doing well today, and welcome to the September CFH virtual coffee, secondary sources. And I'm excited about today, and everyone on this call is excited. We have been working towards this day and the announcements of today for several months, I guess, well, ever since the CFH conference at Baylor in March. And so we are excited to bring this to everyone today. My name is Paul Thompson. I usually start off by saying I'm a former high school history teacher. I taught high school for 13 years in the New York City suburbs. I then made a transition to higher ed, to Christian higher ed, and I have been a professor at North Greenville since 2006, and in about the last 6 years, I've been Dean of Humanities and Sciences. So I as a member of the CFH board, I'll just say that I love the fact that the CFH practically and philosophically is open to high school teachers who love history, want to be the best they can be, and want to do it in a Christian way. And the board has been talking about ways to more and more incorporate secondary teachers. And so as I began to think of ways, I met with each of these individuals on this call at the March meeting, the March CFH, and we just brainstormed things we could do. And one of the great outcomes of that brainstorming session actually was over lunch on that last day, I believe. And one of the outcomes was that the teachers in the room said, podcasts would be a great thing. We want to create a venue, a place for secondary teachers to interact with Christian scholars who are doing cutting edge historical research. And we believe that this is something that really is going to be practical and meet a need for secondary teachers. And so, Priska, David, Zach, everybody sort of jumped on it right away, and Rob, and we're like, okay, let's do this, let's make it happen. So they've been working, so I'm going to let each of them introduce themselves, and then we'll go through and talk a little bit more about how we envision this working out in the coming weeks, months, and years. So David, why don't you start first, introduce yourself.
Absolutely. Well, hello all. Greetings from north of the border. I'm just a few miles north of Seattle, Washington, just outside of Vancouver, British Columbia. And I teach at a large Christian K-12 school. I'm in the high school at Pacific Academy. And I teach, we're a world IB school. I teach IB history. A lot of our social studies courses, our Bible curriculum, mostly in our grade 11, grade 12, 11th and 12th grade. And so, yes, CFH is sort of fits over all of those things, and it's wonderful to be here. So I'm grateful for the opportunity.
All right, Rob.
Hi, my name is Rob Sorensen, and I'm here with my colleague Priska Bird. We're in the same screen because we're not technically savvy enough to keep ourselves from echoing if we're each on our own screen. So I am chairman of the history department at the Bear Creek School, and we're in suburban Seattle, which is just, I don't know what, 100 miles south of David. I've been here for 22 years, and I'm also, I like to call myself kind of a wannabe academic, because even though I'm a high school teacher, I have a PhD, and I do some modest publication record and do some things, and love the fact that CFH is this venue where people like me really have a home, right, with kind of a foot in each camp. So I'm excited about this.
Hello, I'm Priska Bird. I have a master's degree in history from Baylor University and about six full-time years of teaching experience at a secondary level. This is my first year at the Bear Creek School here with Rob. And actually, I have this job arguably because I met Rob at this last CFH history conference, which shows that networking matters.
It does.
And I currently teach medieval and Renaissance literature. But prior to that, I worked at a K-12 private Christian school in British Columbia, where I was the social studies department for the upper level humanities courses. And I taught things like social justice 12 and Canadian history and law 12, things like that. And just absolutely delighted to have the opportunity to converse with you all and carry on the, you know, the positive relationships and energy that we have at CFH events. Bring that into like the podcast and other opportunities for networking.
Thank you. All right. Great. Zach, why don't you share?
Hey, everybody. I'm Zach. I am a former middle school teacher. I was the person in the room that continuing to emphasize middle school teachers matter too. I now direct the nonprofit Thinking Nation, and our mission is to empower students to think historically. I learned at the CFH conference two things. One, that a community like this exists, which was really exciting. And two, that I was different in that I've never worked at a Christian school. I'd never gone to a Christian school. I've always just been a Christian in public academies as both a student and a teacher. And so it's a special home for me, but it's also, it's a great community to reflect on what I do for public education more broadly, but with my lens as a believer.
All right, thank you. And Veronica.
Yes, hi everybody. I am, I think some of you know me. I've been in CFH for quite a while. I've been active. I spent 10 years as a Latin American history professor at Azusa Pacific University. And I very recently, just maybe 6 weeks ago, formally severed my relationship with the university, and I have a new role. So I'm very new to secondary education. So I'm the director of the Great Books Program en Español for the Angelicum Academy. It's a fully online Catholic classical curriculum. And they've been doing online Socratic discussions for over 20 years, since the year 2000. And I guess I can get into my story later, but so I'm teaching in Spanish for the first time. I'm not a native speaker, and I feel very strongly God called me to this position. And I'm so excited that I can continue to be involved with CFH in my new role mm-hmm. and to learn from all of you as I transition. This transition is, you know, it'll take some time to sort of become accustomed to my new roles, but I'm really very joyful to be here with all of you and to continue in a different way.
Thank you. Thank you. So we're going to, I'm going to ask some just open-ended questions, and obviously each of us come to this conversation from a slightly different angle, but we are all about bridging and creating unity from, I'm going to go with Zach from the middle school level. I was originally a junior high teacher in the 1980s when it was called junior high. I always had to figure out who I'm talking to, what language I use, but did that for 3 years before I went to high school. But all the way from junior high through the university level, each of us bring a slightly different perspective. And so we just want to have a little conversation about that. And I thought maybe Rob could start us off by talking about, as he said, he's been involved in CFH in a long time and been a secondary educator for a long time. And why, from your perspective and with your history, is bridging this gap, which is sometimes a gap, but is really not a gap, and it certainly doesn't have to be a gap. It's not in the CFH. But why is bridging the secondary world with the university world so important to you and so valuable to you as an educator?
Yeah, I actually think I've kind of from a both sides sort of thing. I think it's valuable to me in sort of, I don't know, personal, pragmatic stuff. But it's also, I think there's a great mutuality that we have between sort of secondary educators and the academy. So I've been a member of CFH for, I don't know, maybe 15 years or so. And I've sort of developed a habit of every biennial conference submitting a paper and going to the conference. Initially it was kind of a way to keep a foot in the academic world. You know, high school teachers are not always, it's not typical for high school teachers to kind of maintain that academic. Standing. But I found CFH to just be a wonderful venue. I've presented at AHA and some other places, but CFH is uncommonly welcoming. And we share, I think a lot of it is because we share a vision, right? There's a foundation right. that we all share as Christian historians that draws us together. And I just kind of do, and it keeps me going. It keeps me doing some research and doing some writing. In high school, we don't have to do that to, you know, get tenure and to kind of maintain our thing. So it's a secondary thing. And for me, that kind of ability to continue to be a practicing researcher in a small way is a huge advantage to me, both kind of psychologically, because I like to do it, but also as a teacher, right? It keeps me in touch with the latest trends in what professional historians are doing. It gets me some contacts. So if I'm like, boy, I want to know about this thing, I can email someone like, hey, we met at CFH. Can you, you know, help me out with this? Can you send me this paper you might have written? And it helps my students out because, you know, we have students that want to go to Wheaton, and I'm like, hey, I know Dr. McKenzie, right? I'm gonna put a word in for you, right? And when you go out there, here's the people that you can contact with. So there's a huge practical benefit to me. And I would like to think that the benefit goes the other way too, because there is some of the stuff that we as secondary educators bring to the table that is not always the case in secondary ed is, you know, we've got to be great pedagogues. Is that the right word?
Yes.
I mean, we've got to know like how to teach in ways that are not always the case in secondary ed. And I think we bring to the table a lot of, hey, here's some practical know-how about how to get across the things we want to do, how to get students to practice these things, because that's our bread and butter. And I would like to think that we have something to share in that venue. And I think that we've also, you know, these relationships, right? My relationship that says, hey, my students, I know some professors that you can be in touch with. I think it goes the other way too, because we like to hire graduates from history programs in secondary schools. And we would, that relationship, and Prisca came to Bear Creek in, not exactly in that way, but the kind of connections that we have as a community of scholars that allow us to be like, hey, this is a good place for scholars to sort of function. And I think that the high school can be, not always, I think especially high schools like where we're at, and I know where Dave's at, that, you know, they're kind of unique and they value scholarship. That can be a really amenable home for people who want to be scholars, but maybe don't want the particular kinds of rat race that professional academia brings to the table. And I would love to get a lot more people who just love learning and love scholarship that want to teach high school with us. So I think that's my spiel. I think it's just been a wonderful relationship for us to have, and CFH has been, I think, like I said, uniquely amenable to these kind of things.
One of the things that's striking to me as a high school teacher is that students can tell when you're excited about history, when you love your subject, and it's contagious. It's just contagious with kids, and so I think, you know, you're right about so much of this relationship just makes you a better teacher in the secondary level in so many ways. Everybody's got a different. Let me see, Veronica. So why don't you share your story? Talk to us about how you've made this decision to make this transition, and maybe your greatest hopes and expectations.
Sure.
And maybe a little bit of your fears about this transition. So we'd love to hear more about your story.
Yes, thank you. So I did write an anxious blog post about this in August, sort of addressing this transition. It was quite unexpected, but it's pandemic driven, which I think so many of our choices these days are. Yeah. here where we live in LA County, the mask mandate was not lifted at the beginning of last year's school. My children were just viscerally upset about having to go to school and wear their masks all day long. And I was teaching full-time at APU. And I said, well, I only go in a couple days a week. I guess I could technically find a way to work it out. So 3 days, I think, before school started, we pulled our two older ones from school. The little one was still in preschool, and that was a separate place. So I was homeschooling them while teaching full time. And it was when I made the decision that I was going to give up my time, my research and scholarly time to homeschool my children, I knew that probably my life would not be the same. And I thought I might have to give up my career. And I had to cry it out and talk to God and say, okay, I feel very strongly like you're calling me to do this. I'm afraid, but I feel like I'm supposed to do this. So I ended up really, really loving being with my children. And I just didn't want to give up, you know, having to wake up at 6 a.m. and get them off to school and not see them till, you know, 5 p.m. and repeat every day. I thought, you know, I have the flexibility to do this. And so I started to pray. I'd been in an evangelical Christian institution for 10 years. It had been a fairly good experience for most of the time. My final year, though, I was having some issues with not feeling the same joy. And most universities, I think, are struggling right now in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Ours was not an exception. So there were a lot of faculty were leaving my institution. And I prayed. We're a Mexican Catholic family. And I said, you know, it'd be really nice, since I'm teaching my children in a Catholic homeschooling curriculum, to be also for that to be my work as well. And God brought me this opportunity. I reached out to a former Jesuit priest of mine I knew in college, who founded the Great Books program I had gone to, the St. Ignatius Institute at the University of San Francisco. And he put me in touch with the Angelovan Academy. And I just wanted to teach for them here and there. And, you know, just to teach with other Catholic colleagues. And then after I taught for them once, they said, you know what? We actually have this idea. People have been asking us to put our programs into Spanish, and there really aren't very many resources for Spanish speakers who want to do classical education. It's very limited in Latin America itself. There are very few resources, very few opportunities. Would you be willing to direct this program? And it just felt like God had answered my prayers, because it's a fully remote position and I could continue to homeschool my children, including the third one who's now in kinder, and also do something that built upon my training,
As a Latin American historian, we are about to launch next Tuesday with our first class, and we had our brief orientation last week. We have representation from United States, Costa Rica, Colombia, Argentina, Chile, and we have another woman from Canada who's about to join. And I'm so excited that I get to put into practice everything, you know, aspects of my training, also to return to sort of my classical roots where I was trained in high school and college, and also helping me to educate my children, because now they can overhear conversations, we can talk about the same kind of books. And so it's been a real blessing to do that. And I guess my biggest fear is that I've never taught in Spanish before, and I'm not a native speaker, so I will make mistakes. I know that. So, but the students were very gracious when I told them that last week that I'm not a native speaker. The other thing that I think I'm really nervous about is teaching my 5-year-old how to read, because the other two already knew how to read when they started. I think those are the two big things. But yes, so just happy to be here. And I'm very, very new to secondary education. But what I see is there's so much connection. A lot of the conversations we have, the Socratic discussions we have online are so, the students have such incredible insights. It's almost like being in a university classroom. There's not a whole lot of difference that I see as far as the level of conversation, the kinds of ideas and the experience. So for me, it's very, very similar. And I don't have to grade because we have separate graders.
So oh, wow. That's nice.
That's nice for me.
Yeah. Don't have to grade. Wow. Yeah,
living the dream.
I know.
Yeah, right? That is living the dream. You got any more job openings?
I know.
Over there.
Just some networking.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously grading is always the part of my job I hate the most or dislike the most. I'm glad you're finding so much similarity between high school and university teaching, Veronica. I know that, you know, high school teaching varies a lot across the country and between various kinds of schools, obviously, whether it's private schools, charter schools, you know, suburban schools, inner city schools. The best teaching is going to be disciplinary in its skill set, in its focus, in its emphases, whether you're teaching high school or university level. And I think there's a way to take some of that to middle school, Zach, too, keeping that focus. Matter of fact, I know you are with the stuff you're
producing. A lot of it, Paul.
A lot of it. Okay. A lot of it. Why don't you share, Zach, this isn't exactly the order here, but why don't you share some of the stuff you're doing in middle school, or I should say in K-12 education and history that your group is working on?
Sure. So our goal is to take a lot of the disciplinary practices that are really saved for college, at least in the public schools. I mean, I know what David Priska and Rob are doing isn't always reflecting what I see when I'm visiting public schools, but it is a reality that it's content acquisition focused rather than disciplinary skills and kind of utilizing that content in an analytical way. So we want to bridge, university education to K-12 in that regard, and just really providing teachers resources and assessments that emphasize writing and historical thinking and utilizing the content from a disciplinary way rather than from like I'm cultivating walking encyclopedias that can tell me more cool, fun information about the past, but really like, you know, what can I do with a group of sixth graders? A curriculum I'm working on right now is for sixth grade, is the Silk Road an appropriate term to describe the trade networks of Eurasia? Building a curriculum to get sixth graders, 11-year-olds to address that. So on like a practical level, just providing resources. We also provide grading. So all of our partners, we grade student essays on behalf of the partners. So that way it's kind of like an easy entry point for hesitant teachers. It's like, hey, you can do these like robust thinking and writing tasks, but we're going to make sure that we cover your weekends for you and we'll grade. Also kind of in connection to the CFH that was really born out of the meeting is just starting to think of how can we involve scholars into this process. And so kind of the first step that both you, Paul, and Nadia, who's here as well, have helped and participated, is getting historians who are experts in particular fields to review and vet our curriculum to make sure that it's up to date with the historiography, stuff that I can't necessarily keep up with, you know, having my hand in so many different from 6th to 12th grade levels. But just making sure that it's solid and it's concrete in that sense. And so we started doing that this summer. And I mean, the generosity and like the warmth of historians who have helped is just so encouraging. Quite a few from the CFH. This actually started with a session that you were actually leading, Paul, and Pearl Young presented a paper on a particular woman's experience in the Civil War. And I wanted to adapt that for eighth grade. And so I worked really closely with her to do that. And then I'm like, wait a minute, there's something
very
here.
Nice.
Like, let's yeah. do this more broadly. And so the next step that we're going to do, and this is kind of a call to action for anyone listening that's interested, is we're going to create a little mini video series of lectures that go with the curriculum. So the historian who reviewed it will also do a short little 15-minute interview with them. How would you answer the question? What's your favorite primary source? What are some things that you wish everyone knew about this topic? And just so something that teachers can, you know, put on the screen before the unit begins and a scholar is talking about the exact curriculum that their students are using. So that's nice. That's the next stage that we're, you know, pooling grant funds for now. But yeah, so that's when I entered in the CFH and it was like the first academic conference. I mean, I've been to an AHA meeting where there was like an attempt for secondary education, but I felt like the odd man out. And then there was just such a real community. I mean, before the conference even started, David and I got together for some whiskey. And I'm like, wait, oh, like we're both in secondary education. This is amazing. So, yeah, I'm just, nice. I'm really like, you know, excited for this specific initiative that David and Prisca have really took on and supporting them in that. And then kind of using that connection as well as I work in the public school sector and just providing that bridge in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Great. I think the work you're doing is just amazing. I love how discipline, you know, how discipline specific and focused it is, and all the skill sets. And yes, the material that I reviewed for you, I was very impressed. It was just solid history and nuanced and just very well thought through. Good stuff. Good stuff. David, why don't you talk a little bit and share sort of your experiences and your thoughts on professional development and how the CFH works well at the secondary university level.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, that impromptu whiskey that I had with Zach, it was only because he replied. He was the first guy to reply on Twitter back and forth, and then we discovered that we were both secondary educators. So I mean, it just kind of snowballs.
Nice.
This is to affirm and piggyback even what Rob started us off by saying, just how hospitable, warm and welcoming, like authentically warm. And there's just a welcoming atmosphere at the CFH that I've experienced in all my involvement back. My first paper was in 2018 at the Calvin Conference. And Rob was on that panel as well. And that's when I met him. So there's the authenticity, the warmth, and that common vision. It extends into a genuineness in the sessions and in meeting people online through the CFH, in their genuine care for secondary educators. I really sense that, and also to Zach's point about private versus public education. I'm in a private Christian high school. I think this is largely probably my context here in British Columbia, in Canada. We have a fairly good and close relationship with our public sector. Like our curriculum is actually the provincial curriculum. And so most of my professional development, my Pro D, happens in public contexts. And so one of the things that was so refreshing to find in CFH is not to say that I don't have that there's some uniquely and particularly Christian professional development, but this sort of like upped it, you know, like there was the scholarly nature of it. And it's to Rob's point about us being on the front lines of sort of pedagogy and teaching practices.
Yeah.
A lot of Pro D that is focused for secondary teachers, at least, is in that domain and on assessment and learning strategies, all these things.
Right.
And I just wanted to eat up sort of the scholarly aspect of things. It was really refreshing. I mean, admittedly, probably 90% of the stuff that I go and listen to and soak up and what's happening at a CFH conference, it's not going to be the exact lesson I'm going to be teaching in my grade 11 or 12 class, but it's the connection. It's the learning what's out there and being exposed to that. I'll just give one example of, and this is a shout out to Chris Gares at Bethel University. So he's how I found out about the CFH, because he was sitting live tweeting the previous year, I think it was 2016. And that's how I got connected with all of this. And then when I did arrive in person and grateful for my own school to fund me to come and present a paper on the historical thinking, I did a paper on faith formation in the historical thinking as faith formation. And I was just thinking through and shared a little bit of what me and a colleague do. And it was Chris Gares who he grabbed the brochure and he found where the secondary teachers were, and he came in and that's like one of the few times in my life somebody sat and live tweeted what I've been sharing, and he just wanted to promote it and really encourage and just sort of welcomed me in. So, and that's been true across the board with so many, like John Fia and Beth Allison Barr and Kristen Dume and just so many people. So very, very warm. Just about opportunities kind of for those who are listening, who are secondary teachers and who see us kind of like, wow, how do these people lean in and how are they on panels and stuff? You can get onboarded very quickly, and it's very welcoming. Panel, the papers and the stuff to present. Joey mentioned FIDE, Ahistoria. There was a recent, one of the times to share was on how how the pandemic changed our teaching. So there's just opportunities to share. It doesn't have to be peer reviewed things.
Right.
It's just opportunities, right, to share. So I'm just putting that out there to secondary teachers who are listening in. We may be on this panel right now, but we're very much in the trenches, just like so many teachers who want to listen in. And that, I know Prisca will talk to our hope, and Zach's been so excited about this too, of it's not always possible for high school and middle school teachers to travel to academic conferences. And so we're looking at ways to kind of democratize that a little bit and make this, make this more available to folks. So that's why I'm here. And this absolutely is a bucket filler for me professionally and spiritually.
Well, that is awesome. So let's just then transition or build on that. So let's talk about what you are doing. What are the plans, Prisca or David? You can sort of chime in. Explain what we're doing. And this is an initiative led and run by secondary educators who are part of the CFH. As everybody's already said, we are there's no ranking here. There's no pecking order. Everybody is fully equal in the CFH. We're coming together around the common theme and vision, as has already been mentioned. I think Rob talked about that. So, but this is a joint effort of secondary educators and university historians, scholars, writers. So, Prisca, maybe you can break down what the plans are for this podcast and how this is going to work.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So while we had that lunch and we were brainstorming together about what can we do to bring us all together outside of a conference setting, because as we know, it's not always possible, as David said, for secondary teachers to get the time off or the scheduling to go to the conferences and events that you want. And especially for, I think, secondary teachers who have had advanced degrees, have been part of the guild at one point.
Yes.
There's a real mourning and grieving process that happens when you have to step out of that and you still have friends in that field and you see what they're doing and what they get, the riches that they get to enjoy. And then you're kind of like, well, I got some crumbs over here, right? Like, and that is a really, I think, is a real challenge that a lot of teachers face. And what we want to do, and especially as more and more secondary teachers are going to possess advanced degrees because of the academic job market being what it is, We're like, well, why should that be something where you're always feeling it's us and them? We don't believe in that, right? And as everyone has stated prior to this at CFH, it's very much about an equal playing field and about all of our shared love for history and our shared love for like discipling students and having them see Christ in history. And so like, what we want to do is to use a podcast to sort of help facilitate these discussions outside of a conference setting. Now, I know people's first instincts would be like, oh, great, another podcast. We'll do some people talking about ours more special, things. Though. Yeah, ours is special, okay? It's different. It has Christian historians and secondary teachers. Right. But what we thought is, what we love about it is that with a podcast, number one, the format is very accessible. So anyone can tune in at different times. If you are, you know, on your commute to work, if you're after school, if you're on a prep period, you have time to listen to a short 30-minute conversation. It doesn't monopolize, it doesn't require a major time commitment. It also allows us to kind of democratize who hosts and interviews. So all of us who are secondary teachers who are involved with the podcast, we have different passions. We have different areas of expertise. We're still on the clock here. Sorry.
Classic high school
for us.
Yeah. Fair.
But
yeah.
Keep it real.
Just life. Yeah. There you go.
But, life. But one of the things is, you know, we, everyone has different passions and areas of connections that they have. Because I went to grad school at Baylor, I have a wealth of scholars that I know from interacting there. You know, Rob has his connections. David has his, Zachary has his, like everyone who's involved with the podcast, we know people who we'd love to talk with and have engaging conversations. So what's great is the podcast format is basically, it'll be one or two of us CFH members who are secondary teachers interviewing a historian about their work and about sort of pedagogy in general. And what we want to stress here as well is that while we are delighted to receive like research and teaching tip, like and information like from the trenches of research from the historians that we're talking to, we also genuinely as secondary teachers believe that we can give a gift to the CFH by talking about pedagogy, by talking about what our students are concerned with, because ideally we're sending you students and we're part of the pipeline and we're training them up so that they can thrive in your classrooms. And so what we want to do is also have an opportunity for us to be able to share honestly about what is it like to teach? How do we lead good discussions? How do we talk about, we know we want to plan a future podcast session where we talk about how do you deal with controversial subjects in the classroom? From a Christian standpoint, without everyone getting polarized and their hackles up. We had a great session at the last CFH conference about that. Mm-hmm. And it was really great if you were in that panel. There was a really kind of neat bridge between secondary teachers sharing their experiences and teachers in the college university level sharing what's happened for them. And that was just really fruitful. So we want to replicate that in the podcast format. And we hope to, like any secondary teachers who may be listening to this and you want to be involved, please reach out to myself or David McFarland. We want to set you up so that you can interview a historian of your choice. We want you to be able to craft this so that it's useful to you and you feel engaged. Because I know for myself, one of the things that I grieved when I had to step out of academia for full-time teaching was I don't get to interact with these historians anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't get to be part of these conversations. And secondary sources is meant to be, now you're leading this conversation. You are involved. Yes. You're not cut off. You get to hear about this research. You get to know about the pipeline, you know, what books are coming down the pipeline. You're not an outsider. And our first interview is with Dr. Andrea Turpin. And it's absolutely terrific because her expertise, which is like gender and women's history, but as well intellectual history and the history of higher education in the United States, made her a perfect person to launch the podcast with. And we're hoping to have that go live next week at some point. So we're really excited about that. And we just hope that, that secondary teachers will share this with their colleagues, that they will feel empowered to come join us and to participate. And that it can just be a really life-giving community and another great resource for people to use and to feel like they're not outside of the guild, they're a valuable member.
Great. Now, how will we be notified of exactly when it gets posted?
I believe we're just in editing stages right now, just putting little final editing touches on it, and it will be launched on the CFH's main channels. So Twitter, website, as well as other social media outlets. I'm sure that we're plugged into. David can speak more to that.
Yeah, if folks are following CFH channels and the website and social media, it's going to be sort of integrated into and rolled out with with the CFH Faith and History podcast. So that's and Joey is working faithfully behind the scenes on that. Just one quick little shout out too, there's a whole other group of people in the CFH that like about the warm and hospitable and what Priska was talking about of like between the guild and secondary is there's like a robust community of grad students that share and do work. And so some of the interaction that I've had and personally and online have been with grad students around the country doing different things. That are connected with CFH. So there's a whole group of folks there. It's kind of this, just to add to that democratized feel at the CFH, high value.
Great. Now what, so this podcast is hopefully going to post next week. Is there, what sort of time frame are we sort of aiming with frequency? Or what's the frequency you're aiming to? Is there a target frequency, or is it too early to even promise or project?
That's a great question. I think at this point, like we for sure are hopeful that there'll be one quality episode a month.
Okay.
But to be honest with you, if we get enough response from people who want to do interviews, and the idea is that we probably will have people interviewing on their own timelines off to the side. And as we amass interviews, we may be able to release them with more frequency. It really just depends on the level of time commitment that we have from other people. And of course, the availability of scholars as well to participate. We want to be respectful of that. And we're also interested, I should say too, for secondary teachers who may be interested in participating in the podcast, you also are not obligated to interview a historian. We also want to organize panels where it's our secondary teachers talking to each other, debating certain relevant issues and things like that. So it's also, you could also participate in that way. If you have an idea for a panel that you think would be interesting and you have a topic that you want to discuss or have discussed, like please reach out to, again, David or myself, or, you know, send a line down to Zach. Like we want to be cultivating this. And just a little side note, just to be history, I know that we're talking to a historian audience, so this probably maybe goes without saying, but we picked the title of the podcast. We wanted to be clever because we called it Secondary Sources because it's secondary teachers talking to historians, but also just a nod to like the work that we all do together, right? Helping build collective memory and understanding the past through the lens of Christ. That's what we wanted to do together.
If Priska won't say it was totally Priska's brainstormed idea, and we went, it was the first thing mentioned, and no other options needed. Boom.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a brilliant name. It's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So I'm excited about this, and I think it's just going to be wonderful. I love this. I love the plan for the podcast because it is directed by secondary. And I don't just mean secondary people are doing the work of the questioning, but they're doing the work of the thinking about the conversation. Like, what is the conversation about history and about our faith that secondary teachers need to have or want to have? And I love the fact that you guys are the generating those answers to those questions. And so this podcast is based on that. And so we're so excited to be able to do this. Anybody else want to chime in? I don't know if anybody else has been thinking of some extra comments or reflections, Zach or Veronica, or some good little chatting going on too in our chat box. Trying to follow that.
And thank you for everyone who's commented, and a special welcome to Annie. Annie, I hope you'll reach out to us. We love you. You're exactly the type of person that we want involved with the podcast. And even if it's in terms of your ideas, like what you presented there about how do I navigate the perceived limitations of teaching within high school, mm-hmm. right? I think that's a phenomenal idea for a podcast episode, especially when you're coming from academia, where it's like you can do your niche interest research, mm-hmm. you can spend as much time on a topic to some degree as you want. It's really great, that idea of like, well, if I'm trapped within curriculum, what can I do within that curriculum? How do I get kids ready for standardized testing or things mm-hmm. like that? Like, we would love to talk about that. And I know we have many people already involved with the podcast who have experience with that. Including my colleague here, Rob.
Well, one of the things that I found to veer off in a slightly different direction is that high school or secondary faculty, we don't have as many networking pieces as I think college teachers do. And when I meet other secondary teachers through CFH, I have this revelation like, oh, you know, we're doing the same thing, right? We have the same issue. And that standardized test piece, just as an example, like we're all pushing against that, or we're struggling with that conundrum of how do we prepare our students to get grades and tests and those kind of measurables that they really do need in the world without also just compromising and becoming these kind of data delivery machines and encouraging students to really think and to learn and to grow, which is what we really want.
Right.
And that pulls us in different directions. And I love to meet with these other teachers and be like, oh yeah, we're in the same place, right? that's our world too.
Rob, correct me or affirm this. Bear Creek does AP, right? I think that's
the... Yeah, we are. We
are an AP school. Okay, and I saw Annie's comment about, yeah, just standard tests and yep. and AP. I'm, for example, just for anyone else listening, in a world IB school, so the whole International Baccalaureate Diploma Program. So yeah, then we're all in different contexts with state or provincial standards and curriculum. So I think that's a topic. Those are our constraints. It's not publishing, it's not these types of things, but it's curricular standards. And testing. So thank you, Annie, for that. I think we got a direction to go in as well.
Yeah, I think in high school, we so frequently talk about covering the material and, historians like, well, why are we trying to cover it up? But the issue is time, right? I mean, and everybody, even people that are not historians, quickly get it. It's like, you know, if you've been teaching 10, 20, 30 years, you don't have any extra time to cover that more recent history. And the more all this history keeps getting made and interpreted, and there's still the same amount of time or less time to teach it, given, you know, whatever might be the various. It is an ongoing challenge for teachers to teach, to find that right mix of teaching the things you enjoy, the things you're required to teach, the things the students need to know to go to college, just things the students need to know to be good citizens, the things they need to know to be thinking Christians. There's just so many targets we're aiming at as school teachers, and it's I don't think we ever figure it all out. It's just a constant struggle. It's a constant challenge. And how can I tweak it a little bit more this year, tweak this year, and tweak them? We're always tweaking something because it's never quite perfect. but other thoughts anyone wants to share? Or
I might say something. Like I said, I'm sort of coming at this as a very different perspective because I'm fully remote program, and also it's classical education. So it's not discipline based anymore. But in an interesting way, as I've talked about in that podcast, it's sort of there is a tradition of classical education in Latin America that I'm sort of building upon, but also there's this interesting movement among classical education to recognize some of the contributions of Latin American Spanish speakers and indigenous peoples as well, who learned from the Europeans, they learned the classical traditions and then wrote in their own languages, incorporating some of that history and classical conversation into their works that they produced that came out of Latin America. So I'm sort of, and it's so exciting to be at the kind of the edge of this that I get to develop. Our program has 4 years, ancient Greece, ancient Rome, and then year three is the medieval period, year four is the modern period. So year three and four is where I have some flexibility to say, I'm going to swap out some texts. We're going to find original Spanish works that we can then trace these Platonic or Aristotelian ideas.
And
ideas. It's
nice.
So it's a really interesting new kind of a program. I don't know that something like this exists, particularly not online.
And we also open every session with poetry. And it's something that the Angelicum Academy is really adamant that poetry isn't taught very much in schools anymore. So they open half an hour to get students kind of talking. And so for our classes in Spanish, we're going to use, again, Latin American authors and original Spanish poems. So I'm really excited. I didn't quite anticipate when I made this shift how much it was going to continue to broaden my sense of identity as a Latin American scholar to do all this. But yeah, I just wanted to share that because it's a little bit I feel like I don't really fit into the whole secondary education in the same way that you all do, because I'm not working at a brick and mortar school. I'm not teaching subjects all day, but I just started too, and I still feel very much like a scholar, an academic. It's going to be hard to lose that identity, but again, maybe I don't really need to.
No, you don't.
Reshaping our careers are reshaping. And I love this idea of the podcast too, of learning from one another, asking questions and understanding the pedagogy that goes on in high school classrooms and how that can affect us when we get into the university classroom. It's just such a brilliant idea. I appreciate that.
Well, you're going to be incredible in the classroom, even though it's virtual. let me ask you. So your the model, it's synchronous instruction then, right?
It is. So
yeah, right. It makes sense.
It makes sense. We meet for 2 hours once a week to discuss a different classical text. Nice. We start next week. Only the moderator is visible during the main discussion. And the students are not, and only one person speaks at a time. That's how the microphone works in the classroom. So it's very different than what I'm used to at Zoom. It's actually, I appreciate it that I don't see the students because sometimes it can be distracting. Mm-hmm. And they don't need to look at me. I don't automatically pop up. They have to actually click something to put me up on the screen if they choose to, otherwise they don't. And there's a chat box as well that we write our ideas down. So no, it's a, I've done it several times in English. And there's always co-moderators too. So there are always two of us in the online classroom at a time. So students get two different ideas, two different interpretations and questions. So it again, very different from a university experience. And yet in some ways it's similar and builds upon it and kind of broadens it.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. Whatever level we teach at, we have to be about stretching our students, mm-hmm. about expanding them. We have to be about pushing them to the next level and just, understanding that, that every student's going to respond differently, but even their growth will be different. But that's what they're looking for. They want to be challenged. And it sounds like a really neat program that you're going to be in, or design, I should say, pedagogical design, of that school. Zach, any closing words from you? We've got about 5 minutes left. We can maybe sort of give everybody one last round of comments before we sign off.
Thanks, Paul. I think my big closing words is if you want to branch into more public things and work with us on vetting and reviewing curriculum at Thinking Nation, I'd love to hear from you. Like working with historians is always a joy. So please feel free to reach out.
Could you post a link to your website?
Yeah.
I'll
put it in the chat.
Yeah, that'd be great, yeah. I think.
But I mean, more practically, I'm just really excited about this endeavor and so appreciative of Prisca and David for making sure the summer hours weren't wasted getting it started.
Rob, anything you want to say before we close off?
Nothing in particular, except that this is such an exciting thing. And I've been in CFH for a while, and there's been these kind of false starts periodically at CFH about bringing in secondary teachers. And I've kind of been tangentially involved, and there's wheels to it. And it's all about David and Prisca getting this off the ground. And so they're just doing fantastic work, and I'm pleased to be kind of behind them. So.
Well, thank you. And David or Prisca? Prisca, you want to?
Well, I think it's an honor to be able to have the CFH believe in us and want to spotlight this, and want to just take a quick minute to thank the board for prioritizing this because you came to us at lunch and, number one, you organized the lunch so that we could have a special time to gather together and not just indirectly meet by accident and happenstance of who does, oh, you do secondary teaching as well. thank you for being deliberate about this and for making it clear, you know, we're not stuck in classes and within CFH. And, you know, and I know John Fia has been very clear too about how much he believes in this. Yeah, very supportive. And I think one of the reasons why, you know, this has wheels on it is because you guys have put gas in the tank and, you know, you've facilitated us to say, you know, go and run with this. We believe in you. And I think honestly, one of the things I think the best thing about historians is that we're an enthusiastic bunch. That when we get when we get stirred up, we get things done and we genuinely delight in each other's company. And I think that's one of the strengths that, you know, I hope that that warmth will come through in the podcast, that everyone who's doing the interviewing, we love the subject matter, we love the scholarship, we love the scholars, we love teaching. And we want that to be infectious. We want that to be something that, you know, anyone listening to that conversation, they feel they're also part of it, that they're welcome and that they're, you know, we're all, it's what a gift it is to learn from each other.
Yes, yes. So if anybody wants to participate or be involved in a future podcast, they should email either you or David. Is that correct? Yes.
Yeah, and I think we'll talk to Joy about putting our contact information up as well under the posting so that we can streamline that process.
All right. Very good. Very good. David, any final words?
A very, very quick anecdote. It was Jamar Tisby. We were reading. I had assigned one of the chapters out of The Color of Compromise to my students. And I reached out to Jamar via Twitter and he said, let me know if there's anything I can do. And I said, well, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but a quick greeting to our class. He shot a little video to Mr. McFarland's IB history class. And like students all, like literally fell out of their chairs when I put it on the screen. They're like, oh, he's real. He knows about us. So just nice. to academics, to historians, to those doing work and publishing, the fact that you are doing your work and that you exist and that you interact with us in genuine ways at the secondary level, you're blowing some high school student minds. So it's very good. So thank you so much, and yeah, love what's happening here.
All right. Well, thank you all for your time. Thank you for joining us tonight. And those that are perhaps viewing this after it has been recorded and saved, we hope you get a lot out of this. And we hope you're as excited as we are about what the future holds and all the potential for this podcast going forward. So we hope many, many will get involved. All across America, United States, and Canada, and Latin America. Hopefully these podcasts too will start branching out. I know we teach a lot of U.S. history in high school, but there's that world history too, and the global and all of that. And so hopefully we'll be bringing all those various high school themes into these podcasts going forward. Thank you so much. Joey, do you need to wrap us up?
Yeah, let me just go ahead and do a quick recap, because we did have people come in and out, and so they may have not heard all of our announcements. But if you are interested in publishing with Fetus at Historia, you can reach out to our editor, Alicia Kaufman, at fetus@baylor.edu. We will be meeting again the last Friday of the month of October. Lisa Diller and I are collaborating to put together something that's Halloween-friendly. End of interest for those who are interested in the history of witch hunting, magic, folklore, those kind of topics. And then also just to add a little bit something from the college side of things, when we get together as a college department and we meet with our students and we talk about like how we ended up as history department students or as professors in the department, every single time we go in a circle and talk about this at Wheaton College, it usually has something to do with a secondary education teacher that awakened the imagination of a student and the excitement and the passion for studying history. And so that's all part and parcel for why we care so much about this venture and it flourishing. So we're thankful for all of you secondary educators that have come to listen. We're thankful for those of you who are spearheading this whole project for us. And so with that said, just want to say thank you, everyone, and have a great week.